Good day, everyone. You are listening to the Power Hour. Alan Myers back. Happy to be joined by Douglas V. Gibbs. Dougie, how you doing today?
Doing fantastic.
Excellent. Well, for the first 5 minutes, we're going to have a little intro to what we're going to talk about today. And I noticed in the news recently that in Pennsylvania, the Supreme Court turned away a challenge to a Biden administration executive order that is intended to boost voter registration. That executive order is 14019, and it was issued on or about March 7, 2021. And apparently, the justices of the Pennsylvania Supreme Court did not comment in rejecting the appeal from Republicans who claim the order is unconstitutional, is an unconstitutional attempt to interfere in the November election. And the lower courts have dismissed the lawsuit. Dougie, before we get in, just so people know who you are, because we're going to get heavy into this, a little self promo. Wait a minute. Are you also Mr. Constitution?
It's funny you should bring up a constitutional topic with Mr. Constitution, DouglasVGibbs.com. And I've got lots to say about this one. So you set it up nicely. And yes, the lawsuit was correct. It's not constitutional. The executive order is not constitutional. But now that I've given away the ending,
Yeah,
we get to.
thanks. Thanks.
Yeah.
Anyway, how long, just for everybody's knowledge, you give classes in person now, also online. You have been studying the Constitution of the United States for how long?
Since I was just a kid, actually, I'm self-taught. I own over 4,000 books, a good, probably close to half of them on history and or the Constitution. And so if anybody has read just about everything about the Constitution, especially original documents, that would be me.
Well, just because most people won't know how old you are, so saying that you've been studying this since a kid, could we have some decades here?
Decades, going back to the 70s. Of
Okay.
course, my grandchildren are convinced I know so much because I was there in history, but hey, you know.
Yeah, it's possible. All right. So maybe you've got 40 years at this topic. Yeah.
More than that.
Okay.
50.
Good.
50 years on this. I've been working on this stuff for half a century. I've been reading this stuff for half a century.
Thank you. That gives, and the reason to do that is when people talk about that they know the Constitution, they study the Constitution, it helps, I think, for the listeners to know the background.
Well, that's what I do. I give context. And when I teach my classes, I literally go line by line through the Constitution, give full context of what it means, what it's about, why it was written the way it was, what was going on in the on the historical scene at the time, and so on and so forth. So I'm not just going to say, yeah, and be done with it. There's so much more to the answers than meets the eye often.
So, do you think the founders, the framers, they were actually thinking when they wrote the Constitution?
It's amazing that we had such a collection of such brilliant minds all at once.
And for those who, and Doug, you can always correct me if I get this wrong, but for those who may not know, and it's important to know the backdrop, the Constitution was crafted in 1787. In Philadelphia, in the summer, for 4 months, they banged on the doors with each other for over 4 months in the heat with the windows and the doors closed.
Ever been to
This thing,
Philadelphia during the summer with the humidity?
they
Yeah.
did not. Wait a minute, they didn't turn on the air conditioning? Oh, crazy.
And they're wearing wool clothing. They have waxed wigs on.
Anyway, it's just important to know how seriously they all took
The content of this program is meant for educational purposes only, because knowledge is power. However, the controversial subject matter discussed may not necessarily reflect the views of this station, its management, staff, or its advertisers. The Power Hour has been in existence since the turn of the 21st century. The need for independent media is more critical than ever as people search for the truth. For the past 20 years, the Power Hour has focused on subjects which inform and educate about the real challenges we face as a nation. Join us as we discuss the Constitution, current events, and natural health solutions with the best experts on radio. Learn from some of the most insightful commentators you'll find in talk radio.
All right, we're live.
Live and alive.
And I'm going to say this for both of us, even though I have not checked in with Doug on this. We are both happy to be alive. Would you say that, Doug?
Happy to be alive?
Yeah.
Is that what you said?
I did say that.
Yeah, usually that's the case, yeah.
That's why we're live. Okay, here. I don't know what's going on. Okay, we're back. For those who want to call in, we like call-in. Call-in number is 1-800-231-1760. And for those who write as slow as Doug, 800-231-1760. Give us a call. Love to chat.
Only because I write in old English.
Is that it? Oh, okay. Well, that makes sense.
You saw what the We the People looks like. Yeah, that's what my numbers look like.
You know? It takes time to get this thing done perfectly. Before we get into Executive Order 14019, I want to give a little backdrop. I'll make a few comments, Doug. I want to hear you. My understanding about executive orders is that there is nowhere in the Constitution, remember, the contract that created the federal government. Now, did the federal government exist before the Constitution was ratified?
Not the constitutional federal government. No, there was a government. It was some people called it a federal government, but it was under the Articles of Confederation. But the states created this federal government that we have today through the Constitution, through their delegates that met in 1787.
Beautiful. And there are three branches of the government: legislative, executive, and judicial. Legislative was the only one given the power to create laws, make laws. Executive branch was to execute the laws, and judicial was to apply the laws. Is that pretty close?
Got it.
See, I've been listening to you. Thank you.
Every once in a while, yeah. Well, you know, you said create the laws, and this is key because the power of government begins with the ability to make law. The power of government is law, and so the authorities flow through Congress, the two houses. And in Article 1, Section 1, it says that all legislative powers herein granted shall be vested in a Congress. Legislative powers are not just the ability to create law, but to modify law and to strike down law. And in that clause, the word vested being used means that it's exclusionary. Only the legislative branch has that power, and irrevocable. They can't just give away that power. It belongs to them, and it is theirs, and they can't give it away. Then you got the president who executes the laws. They have to be made first. If they're not, if the laws don't exist, they can't be executed. And then, of course, the judicial branch who applies the laws. Once again, law can't be applied unless it's been created in the first place. So law has to exist for the other two branches to even have a job. All the power begins with the legislature. And that's key in what we're getting ready to talk about.
You got to right where I wanted to talk about, which was vested. This is, again, I'm new to all this, not like Doug who's been doing this for 300 years. Vested never meant a whole lot to me until I started getting into this. And now I understand how absolutely powerful that word is.
It's probably one of the most important words in the Constitution.
Which is another way of saying this, the states are saying to Congress, we are giving you this power. We're vesting it with you. We're giving it to no one else, no thing else. It is only yours, and you cannot give it away. Is that pretty close?
Close.
Okay. So now we're going to get to, and y'all can look this up online. You can get a copy of it. It's actually a really long executive order. I don't know how long it took Biden to type this one up. It is Executive Order 14019. And it is on promoting access to voting. Okay? This is the opening line. And I want to talk about this again. By the authority vested in me. Remember, this is signed, and I looked at the end of it. It's signed by Joseph R. Biden Jr. By the authority vested in me as president by the Constitution and the laws of the United States of America, it is hereby ordered as follows. Okay.
We use that wonderful word vested. And vested is also a transfer of power or transfer of authority. So somebody gave him that power, if he's going to use that word from his point of view. Doesn't mean he actually has that power, but that's beside the point.
What authority is vested in the President of the United States by the Constitution to create laws or orders?
What's vested in the President is the ability to execute the executive power. It says so at the very beginning of Article 2, Section 1, that the executive powers are vested in a president. Executive powers mean the power to execute the law. Therefore, an executive order is not going to have, they're not going to be legally binding in the sense that they create law, modify law, or repeal law. They are for the purpose of A, executing the law, or B, making a proclamation. And when I say executing the law, in other words, sending instructions to the executive branch in writing, because founding fathers want everything in writing on how to apply the law, execute the law. And the term executive orders didn't even exist back during the founding. Executive orders did exist. They were called proclamations. Thanksgiving proclamation by George Washington was an executive order, but everybody was not ordered by law to celebrate Thanksgiving. It's a proclamation. Hey, this is something we ought to do, but it's not legally binding.
A proclamation, being something in the order of, I really like this idea and I want to share it with America.
Something like that, yeah.
I can't force you to do it. You're not going to be forced to do it, but this is something we can all share in. I, the top executive of the federal government, I'm making this statement to the people.
Right. Okay. There's a lot of famous proclamations, and one of them I like to use is one of Ronald Reagan's, which established the National Day of Prayer. It's a proclamation. You're not required to get on your knees on the day of prayer or be arrested. It's a proclamation. And that's what executive orders are, proclamations, or once again, instructions to the executive branch on how to execute a law, but the law has to exist. So first of all, we have to ask ourselves when it comes to Biden's executive order here is, A, does the law already exist? And B, if it does that law exist legally and constitutionally? There is no constitutional authority for the federal government, by the way, to get involved in registering voters. That's a local issue. That's up to the states and all of that. First of all. Second of all, the law doesn't exist. So that means he's trying to create law or create an order with his executive order. He has no such authority. It's unconstitutional.
Wait a minute. You're telling me the president of the United States of America today cannot say something, and by the fact that he says it or writes it down, it doesn't become law?
You mean mandates? No.
That's crazy. And so that means you, and can Congress pass a law that would actually not follow the Constitution and have that law be legal?
The Constitution is a fascinating document. We have a federal government that's limited. Our government is unlike any government in the world. In the rest of the world, the central governments or national governments, they are at the top. They control everything. They have the authority over everything. Ours does not. Only what's in the Constitution, enumerated would be the proper term in the Constitution, do they have power over. There will be some that might argue that there are some powers that are implied law, implied powers. And there's a lot of tyrannical personalities out there who love to use that. It's a bad interpretation. I'm not going to get too much into that. From the Founding Fathers' point of view, if the federal government is to have an authority, it must be expressly enumerated on the pages of the Constitution, either in the first articles or in a subsequent amendment.
To that point, and we'll get into 14019, which is that for those who have their handy pocket Constitution, you want to go to, there you go. His looks much better than mine.
See, I've got the National Center for Constitutional Studies one.
Yeah. I have a used one. Anyway, the thing that's important is that if you want to know what the federal government, what powers were given to the legislative branch, because it's in Article 1, you go to Article 1, Section 8. That's it. And as Doug said, those are the enumerated powers. Now, how serious were the founders on, or the framers, on this being very limited? And some people find some of the first 10 amendments to be kind of redundant because it's already in the Constitution. I actually like them, and I don't mind if
thereof. And then we'll explain that in a sec.
Well,
in other words, what he's saying when he says they're already in the Constitution, he said, well, no, there's nothing about guns before that. So, but what was it saying? Shall not be infringed. If guns are not listed, then already shall not be infringed. That's what he means. Yes. There's nothing in the Constitution, first seven articles, that gives the federal government authority to pass law regarding religion or to establish a church. First Amendment says Congress shall make no law. It was already not allowed. It's just that the Bill of Rights doubles down and makes sure that it's in plain English. Congress shall make no law, shall not be infringed, shall not be violated. Wonderful language like that. It's interesting because a lot of people think the Bill of Rights grants rights. No, it tells the federal government, hands off our rights. God granted our rights to us.
Thank you for that. The one that really hits home on this area, and I'm going to read it because it's really short. The 10th Amendment. If people are listening today and they're thinking, well, maybe not, da da da, this is what the 10th Amendment is. The powers not delegated to the United States by the Constitution, nor prohibited by it to the states, are reserved to the states respectively or to the people. The powers not delegated to the United States by the Constitution. That to me is really bringing it home. if you, the government, were not granted these powers, given these powers, you don't have them. And one of the biggest lies of all time for me is implied powers. No means no. It doesn't mean try.
Implied powers opens the door to interpretation.
Yes. And who likes to do broad interpretation? Supreme Court.
Supreme courts, the Supreme Court, the federal courts, and pretty much everybody who thinks that they are a political scholar.
Yeah. So now we get into, I think that sets the framework, which is executive orders. If they're not really in the Constitution, but it was understood, the first one written by George Washington was from he, the president of the United States, to the rest of the executive branch. Hey, what are you guys doing? Help me out.
Executive orders are defined in the Constitution in the sense that it tells us what the executive is allowed to do and not allowed to do. He's not allowed to make law, so an executive order then cannot make law. He is allowed to instruct the executive branch how to execute the laws of the union, because his job is to execute the laws of the union. Therefore, that would be a characteristic of an executive order.
Which means this executive order, if it applies to anyone, it applies to the executive branch, and that's it. It doesn't apply to the states. It doesn't apply to Congress, judicial, and it absolutely doesn't apply to we the people. Yet when these come out or mandates come out, people just are kind of instructed to just bow down.
Mm-hmm.
And I would say this, if I'm the president of the United States and I can issue an executive order or a mandate and everyone in the country has to follow it, am I the president?
Sounds more like a king.
I'm the king, yeah. Well,
and James Madison, and funny I would bring this guy up because he's kind of known as the father of the Constitution.
Who? James?
James Madison.
Yeah.
Fourth president of the United States, Mr. Constitution, but father of the Constitution, took great notes during the convention, which I studied. And he's also one of the authors of the Federalist Papers. The Federalist Papers, Hamilton and John Jay were the original authors, and Hamilton authored most of them, were essays directed at New York to convince New York to ratify the Constitution. But the problem is Hamilton had this reputation as a big government-minded guy, and he needed a counterbalance when it came to the writers to create a little, comfort by some of the readers. So he asked James Madison to write some of the papers. James Madison, being recognized as father of the Constitution, a guy who believed in limited government, so on and so forth. And in Federalist 45, I think Madison nails it best. What he wrote was the powers delegated by the proposed Constitution, to the federal government are few and defined. There's not many, and they're defined. They're listed. It's obviously there. Those which are to remain with the state governments are numerous and indefinite. The former, the federal government, will be exercised principally on external objects as war, peace, negotiation, and foreign commerce, which the power of taxation will, for the most part, be connected. The powers reserved to the several states will extend to all objects which, in the ordinary course of affairs, concern the lives, liberties, and properties of the people, and the internal order, improvement, and prosperity of the state. So in other words, outside stuff, stuff that affects the union, trade with other countries, stuff like that, if it has something to do with the union, then that's a federal authority. If it has nothing to do with the union, it's internal, it's about our lives inside our state, the improvement and prosperity of our state, then it's a state power, and it's none of the federal government's business.
You either did that from memory or you read really well. That was beautiful. And it's just, for me, it's very important to understand the backdrop to this, which They were serious. They had just finished or recently finished a war with the tyrant of tyrants at the time, Great Britain.
They just fought a war against big government. They weren't about to create one.
Right. And if you look at some of the amendments, those amendments were, to me, specifically because what they endured with Britain when they were colonies and during the and what they fought against as states. As I said, I gave you the opening line. By the authority vested in me as president by the Constitution, there is no authority vested.
Not to order people around, no.
Right. The first section, and I'm going to read part of this. We can talk about it. Again, we're not going to probably get through all of it, but the upshot will be there. The purpose of this EO, the right to vote is the, and I'm going to stop myself as soon as I get through this first sentence. The right to vote is the foundation of American democracy. Doug?
Time somebody muttered democracy to me on a show, I pounded my fist on my desk and all of my equipment went blank. So I'm going to refrain.
Thank you.
From that. Now, and democracy is not just the key. Read that passage again. I want everybody to let it sink in and let's break it down.
The right to vote.
Stop. A right is something given to you by God. And it cannot be taken away. It cannot be adjusted. It cannot be denied. It is your right. Voting, and I know they use the word right. We believe it's a right, is a privilege. It is a privilege of citizenship. If you're not a citizen, you can't do it. If it was a right, you could do it no matter who you were. It is a privilege of citizenship. It is a privilege of also being a good citizen. If you're a felon, you're not supposed to be able to vote. If you're, you know, and the list goes on and on and on. So once again, I've never liked, and I know it says that in the Constitution in like four places with amendments, the right of the citizens to vote. It's, and you know who agrees with me is Bushrod Washington. He was a member of the United States Supreme Court and the nephew of George Washington. He actually wrote a pamphlet about the difference between rights and privileges. And guess where he listed voting under privileges? Now, right, that's... So first of all, let's just get that aside. Okay, now move on.
Wait a minute. Just to highlight this, I get through four words of a five-page document.
And we're at break.
And it's already – are we at break?
Just about.
Oh, okay. Well, no, the point is, because I haven't heard the music yet, the right to vote is wrong. We'll be right back after these important messages.
Empower your day by tuning in to the Power Hour Live every weekday from 11 a.m. to 12 p.m. Central Time. Join us for dynamic discussions and call in with your questions or comments at 888-627-6008. Can't make it live? No worries. You can catch the replay anytime 24/7 by visiting thepowerhour.com. Want to stay in the loop? Sign up for our daily newsletter to get show archives and guest info straight to your inbox. And if you're a podcast fan, we've got you covered on all major platforms and devices. So whether you're tuning in live or catching up on your commute, the Power Hour is always within reach. Don't miss out. Join our community and make every hour a Power Hour. Power your life with the best health, wellness, and readiness products from thepowermall.com. Each purchase you make doesn't just benefit you, it also supports independent news media. That's right, you're backing the good guys who bring you the truth. Feel good knowing that every dollar you spend helps small businesses grow. Imagine a community where your health is optimized and your mind is well informed. That's the future you're building with the Power Hour and the Power Mall. So, take the step today. Empower your wellness and support independent media. Shop smart. Shop independent. Shop thepowermall.com. Together, we make a difference.
Come to the Power Mall today and purchase Mediterranean black seed oil from North American Urban Spice. Exclusively from the genetic source and never standardized. Cold pressed, it's so good it supports cardiovascular, respiratory, immune, digestive, neurologic health, and so much more. Said to be good for everything but death itself, come find the best prices on black seed capsules or 8-ounce varieties when you visit thepowermall.com. Or call 877-817-9829 to purchase.
If your wellness routine needs a boost, you're in for a treat. Meet vitamin B17. Did you know that vitamin B17, also known as amygdalin, is a natural compound found in plant-based sources like bitter apricot seeds? It's time to explore how this powerful nutrient can support your overall well-being. Our vitamin B17 capsules and bitter apricot seeds are made with the highest quality standards, ensuring each product is pure, potent, and packed with benefits. Imagine starting your day with a boost of natural goodness. Vitamin B17 is known for its potential health benefits, from supporting your immune system to promoting general wellness. And for those who prefer a convenient option, our extra potent B17 500 milligrams capsules are here to help you on your journey to better health. Why choose Richardson Nutritional Center? Because we believe in providing you with the very best. Our products are meticulously processed to maintain their natural integrity and efficacy. Your health and satisfaction are our top priority. So what are you waiting for? Embark on a natural journey to wellness today. Head over to thepowermall.com or give us a call at 877-817-9829 to place your order. Discover the health benefits of vitamin B17 and take a step towards a healthier, happier you with Richardson Nutritional Center. Act now and feel the difference.
Boost your immune system naturally this year with oil of oregano, a potent germ killer. This is the true wild oregano oil P73, a blend of edible spices of wild oregano grown on natural mineral-rich soils. Research published in the International Journal of Food Microbiology found that oil of oregano is an excellent germicide capable of killing a wide range of fungi and bacteria. Get it today by visiting thepowermall.com or calling 877-817-9829.
Looks like we are back. Alan Myers here, Douglas V. Gibbs, and this is the Power Hour. Thanks for joining us. Keep in mind we have a call-in number, and I'm not going to say it because Doug's already written it down, so I'll say it regular. 800-231-1760. 800-231-1760. This is toll free in the U.S. and Canada. Give us a call. Dougie, welcome back. Glad to have you. So we got through the first four words of the first line. And I mean, given the fact that the intro was wrong with authority vested, there's no right to vote. As you clearly stated, it is simply a privilege granted.
Citizenship, a privilege of citizenship. You hear what I'm saying, right, folks?
Yeah.
Undocumented Democrats are not allowed to
vote. Yeah. Or the dead ones.
Or all the dead people.
Yeah. Okay. So continue.
Whether or not you can register your dogs, I guess that's different. Call-in number is 888-429-5471, 888-429-5471.
That's a new number. Okay.
Yes, it is.
The one I had that I gave was on a sheet. Anyway, we're going to continue. So the right to vote does not exist, but apparently, again, we're still in the first sentence here, is the foundation of American democracy. Okay, to me, I'm gonna put my two bits in, and then you can have at it. The foundation of this country is the contract, the Constitution, not voting. Voting is a way of you to participate in the government, in the country. But to me, it's not the foundation. It's the document that's the foundation. And then we get to that four-letter, what I call the four-letter word, democracy. America was created. United States of America was created to be a republic, not a democracy. And when people, and how many people, whether they're in office, running for office, they're in media, they keep using this word like as if it applies to this country, and it doesn't. Doug, you're familiar with the Constitution, right? Pretty familiar?
Yeah, pretty familiar.
Okay, help me out here, because you know I'm slow on this. How many places, how many times in the Constitution as amended is the word democracy?
You say zero.
Then how can we be the American democracy? Oh, yeah, we can't.
Well, maybe it's in the Declaration of Independence. No, it's not there either. In fact, the word democracy, the only time it shows up in most of the founders' writings is when they want to disparage democracy. Our system, our Constitution, was written, one of the key principles in that document is the proper distribution of power. And power is a fascinating thing. What's Pelosi's new book? Oh, The Art of Power. Certain people think about power all the time. Power can be easily misused, abused, and misapplied. So the founders, recognizing that in history, power is a danger if consolidated, they sought to distribute that power. So they didn't want too much power in the hands of the president, or too much power in the hands of Congress, or too much power in the hands of the judges, too much power in the hands of the federal government or the state governments, and believe it or not, too much power in the hands of the people. Democracy puts all power into the vote. And typically what that means is the population centers, that's where most of the people are, have their way. And as Jefferson put it, where 51% can vote away the rights of the other 49%. And the reality is that tyranny tends to rise out of population centers. Population centers telling farmers how to farm is generally not a good idea. So they wanted to make sure those farmers in the rural areas and the places that were not concentrated in a population center had also some power. And in a democracy, rural areas and other areas outside of population centers don't have much power, don't have much voice. So the key was to create mechanisms, checks and balances, and Republican, and I mean Republican as in being a republic, not party, Republican characteristics of our system, so that the minority voice was a strong voice and could stand against the powerful voice, the Democratic voice in the cities.
Just to add some of this, I pulled up some of my quotes that I've logged in on what the founders thought of democracy. And I think
this should be fun.
Okay. And I'm just going to read a few.
Okay.
Then we'll get into the executive order, which already I think we've trashed because it has no foundation in the Constitution.
His front bumper screwed up. What do you think the rest of the car looks like?
Not good. This is in a letter from John Adams to John Taylor, April 15th, 1814. Remember, democracy never lasts long. It soon wastes, exhausts, and murders itself. There was never a democracy yet that did not commit suicide. What do you think?
For those who want to look it up, that's John Taylor of Caroline. And yeah, it doesn't sound very like he was very favorable towards democracy.
From John Marshall, and Doug knows I am not a fan of him, but I still like
neither
this
am
one.
I. But go ahead.
Between a balanced republic and a democracy, the difference is like that between order and chaos.
Pulling no punches.
Thomas Paine. A democracy is the vilest form of government there is.
That's painful to hear.
That is, and this is really something, and I'll leave it at this one. Again, I'm not a big fan of Hamilton's, but this comes from him. We are now forming a republican form of government. Real liberty is not found in the extremes of democracy, but in moderate governments. If we incline too much to democracy, we shall soon shoot into a monarchy or some other form of dictatorship. A real disease is democracy.
That quote speaks to something that's very critical here. Democracy, historically, every time, not some of the time, not most time, every time has been a transitional government. It transitions the system from that of a whatever it was to an oligarchy, to a place where a powerful few control the many. It leads to socialism, communism, monarchy, theocracy, or whatever other oligarchical system is on the horizon. It is tyranny. Democracy always leads to tyranny, always. It is a transitional system. Republics historically stand the longest. Of course, even republics often, because of human nature, ultimately become oligarchies, become tyrannies. But, you know, Roman Empire is a great example. It began as a kingdom, and then it was a Roman Republic. But eventually, even that republic succumbed to tyranny and became the Roman Empire. But it took a very long time because of that republican foundation.
Thank you for that, though. Continuing on, I think we've pretty much trashed the first line of this.
I think we just created a new group of people who suddenly don't like the word democracy.
Well, yeah, to me, it's a four-letter word. All right. Free and fair elections that reflect the will of the American people must be protected and defended. Okay. But whose job is it to protect and defend? Is it the federal government? Is it the states? The counties? The people? Who is it, Doug?
Well, it's interesting because that hinges on this idea that has bubbled up over the last century, one person, one vote. And on the surface, that sounds wonderful until once again, you understand the nature of democracy. Free, fair elections. If they were free and fair and they were following the law, they would do things like check ID at the voting booth. So it's really a play on words.
Okay, I'm going to keep reading, and I'm probably just going to get through this first paragraph, actually, the purpose of this. But many Americans, especially people of color, confront significant obstacles to exercising that fundamental right. We've already talked about it's not a right, it's a privilege.
And also, what obstacles?
Well,
what obstacles? There are no obstacles other than go get an ID.
I'm going to tell you right now what.
And everybody has an ID. Everybody knows how to check the box. Everybody understands you need to be registered in order to vote. So right. Basically what is being said there is actually a negative chop at the face of those who they consider to be quote-unquote minorities. And I don't even like the idea of identity politics. Why are you singling out groups, Mr. President? Aren't we all just Americans? Oh, we want non-Americans to vote too, I guess, according to.
Yeah.
But anyway.
These obstacles include difficulties with, are you sitting down, Doug? Hold on.
I'm sitting.
Okay. These include difficulties with voter registration, lack of election information, and barriers to access at polling places.
This isn't the 1870s or the 1960s.
For generations, Black voters and other voters of color have faced discriminatory policies and other obstacles that disproportionately affect their communities. These voters remain more likely to face long lines at the polls and are disproportionately burdened by voter identification laws.
Hold on a second now. If voting is so difficult, if they don't know where to go, they don't know how to do it, then how is it they're burdened with long lines at the polls?
Well, you see, they're
if nobody knows what to do, how is there a long line?
Well, wait a minute. Does this have to make sense? I remember seeing a video, and I forget that he's a frequent person out in the media, and he went to Berkeley to talk to people there. Yes, mostly white, or all white. And
Tommy Horowitz.
Thank you.
Did this.
And to talk about, you know, voting and everything, and, oh, you know, getting this ID, it's so hard. They don't know where the DMV is. Oh, they may not know how to access computer.
The white leftist, liberal, progressive, commie, Democrat voters of Berkeley.
Then he went to Harlem and talked to the people.
All those disenfranchised people who are suffering from all of that different bigoted racism, right?
Right. And I'm looking at the expressions and what these people are saying in the video. And this one guy goes, the DMV is 8 blocks that way. A lady saying.
And it's funny because the way Ami does it says, got an ID? Well, yeah, everybody does. Know how to use a computer? Well, yeah, even a kid does. They're like confused. He said, well, there's people in Berkeley saying, you know, you don't know. What are you talking about? And I love this. They say that's ignorant.
So you get the idea that.
And then he asked him, hey, what do you think of voter ID? And they're like, well, I'm okay with that.
Well, just out of curiosity, if you're a young looking person and you want to go into a facility that sells alcohol open, do you have to show ID?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. If you're driving a car and you get pulled over, are you supposed to have ID? Yeah. It's ridiculous. Now, this you can speak to. Members of our military serving overseas, as well as other American citizens living abroad, also face challenges to exercising their fundamental right to vote. Once again, it's not a right. It's a privilege. Do people in the military overseas have a problem?
No.
Based on your time in the Navy?
Well, they're not as polite as we are. They don't stand in line as nicely. But no, I want to go back to something that you just said a moment ago. I want to give you a list here. A valid ID not required. Voting. Here's a quick list of things in which a valid ID is required. And notice that a lot of these things are from those neighborhoods sometimes.
Wait a minute. Do we have time for this whole list?
Oh, yeah. It's a short list, but it drives home. Valid ID required, boarding a plane, applying for a job, cashing a check, food stamps, driving, getting married, adopting a pet, buying alcohol. I think that says it all. But valid ID not required, voting. Which on that list is the most important thing when it comes to the future of our country?
Voting.
But no ID? Why? Because they want, once again, the undocumented individuals coming across the border. to also participate. And also I tell people we have a zombie apocalypse every 2 years, the dead rise to vote.
Say that list again. I want people to really note it, please.
Okay. Yeah, very good. All right. So once again, valid ID required, boarding a plane, applying for a job, cashing a check, food stamps, driving, getting married, adopting a pet, buying alcohol.
There's one other thing where a different type of ID is required, and that is you go to apply for a job, like you're saying, you have to have an ID. You also need something else, because if you're going to be an employee, you're going to be paid wages, and your employer is going to withhold money. So you have to have a social security number, which is another form of ID. Okay, our life is riddled with the requirement to have identification. And they're saying that, well,
it's racist to require those people to have an ID. Go back to Ami Horowitz. Do you have an ID on you? Well, yes, I do. Everybody does.
Well, of course you do. I drive a car. I buy alcohol.
Well, even if you don't drive a car, for a while, because of medical issues, my driving privilege was actually suspended for a little while. So what did I do? Because I needed to be able to function in society, I went and got a state-issued ID that wasn't a driver's license. They have those.
Yes.
So even if you don't drive, well, yeah, but gosh, Doug, do you know how to get one? Yeah, you walk in the DMV and say, hey, I'd like a ID. And they say, okay, do you have this document and that document? And if you don't have them, you can go to another place to get those documents, like, you know, a birth certificate, sure, stuff like that.
Right. The whole premise or the purpose of this EO, which is, again, extremely long, is that they're saying there's
just a basically problem. Get people to vote who doesn't normally vote, to make sure people are getting registered, not because they can't, because they haven't.
The whole the problem doesn't exist, number one, mm-hmm, not the way they're being laid out. Two, is this a federal issue or a state issue?
Authority in the Constitution for the federal government to be involved in this.
So it's a state issue.
And ultimately, going out of the way to encourage people to register to vote, that's up to the parties and groups and things like that. It's not up to the government. And it's lopsided because where they're putting the money based on this executive order are in places that lean a certain way politically.
Right.
Need I say which party?
No. So that's the purpose. We'll talk about policy.
Well, it's election interference is what it is. It's election influence. You know, the stuff they accuse their opponents of.
Right. Because, you know, the whole idea behind this is they want to eliminate discrimination and other barriers to voting. We're not in the 1800s.
This isn't 1870s. This isn't the 1960s.
Right.
This isn't what we saw during the 1920s and 30s or poll taxes or things like this. It's not going on anymore.
This is an interesting, and we'll end with this because we're about to run out of time. This is policy section two. It is the policy of my administration, that's Biden, to promote and defend the right to vote. We've already talked about it's not a right. For all Americans who are legally entitled to participate in elections. Got that one right.
Yeah, legally, but he's also saying it's a privilege by saying that.
Well, wait a minute. I thought it was a right.
Of course, he did throw the word entitled in there. No.
Well,
I mean, and essentially he's right, but the word entitled usually means government's going to give you something. But, you know.
It is the responsibility of the federal government to expand access to and education about voter registration and election information and to combat misinformation in order to enable all eligible Americans to participate in our democracy.
Combat misinformation. In other words, violate the First Amendment and tell you you're not allowed to have freedom of speech if you disagree with them.
Right. Well, and to participate in our democracy. Now, isn't that misinformation?
We see the word democracy so much, even I'm starting to get confused. I flip on the TV, Democracy 2024, up on the screen real big. And everybody now be ready to participate in your democracy. It makes me want to puke.
So in the section where they want to combat misinformation, they actually give misinformation.
Right. And it's misinformation and disinformation to disagree with their misinformation and disinformation.
Well, let's hope so. We only have a couple minutes left. I want to, again, we'll keep talking until we hear the music. But, Doug, thank you so much for being here. I really,
my pleasure's all mine. And understand, audience, this isn't the only time I'm on the radio.
No, really? Oh,
well, it's not the only time you're on the radio either.
Well, share, please.
On Saturdays from 1 to 3 Pacific, I am on, along with Alan and my good friend Dennis, Constitution Radio on KMET AM.
KMET.
1490 AM. I did it backwards and got confused. But anyway, just go to DouglasVGibbs.com, hit radio. But I'm also on Saturdays in the evening on two stations in San Diego, KPRZ.com, or you can look up The Answer San Diego. KPRZ is the Christian station in San Diego, 9 p.m. Pacific on Saturday nights, or 8 p.m. Pacific on KCBQ, The Answer San Diego. But you know what? If you don't live in San Diego, that's okay. Any podcast platform out there, here's all you got to do. Put in the search bar, Mr. Constitution Hour by Douglas V. Gibbs. Mr. Constitution Hour by Douglas V. Gibbs, or go to DouglasVGibbs.com. By the way, I have a blog. Read what I write, too. PoliticalPistachio.com or DouglasVGibbs.com, and just hit the blog link.
And it's called Political Pistachio, because normally that's what Doug's eating when he's on radio, is pistachios.
Oh, you'll be shocked. I have pumpkin seeds today.
Oh, my gosh. Well, it's the holiday. Come on. For me, I am on Constitution Radio, KMET 1490 AM, and I say AM because it stands for America. I'm Sundays 5 to 7 p.m. West Coast time, Patriot Soapbox, my program for the Republic. You can check us out on Patriot Soapbox and my website. For those who want all kinds of information, including basic monetary system education, FedEd, FEDED.US. That's FEDED.US. Well, this has been, I didn't know where we were going to go, but I think we check out 14019 executive order. But now you have an understanding, folks. Executive orders are only communications meant to be within the executive branch, and democracy is a four-letter word. Until next time, may y'all be safe and well.
There has never been a better time to buy gold and silver. To buy gold and silver direct, call our partners at Cornerstone Asset Metals. You can reach them at 888-747-3309 and make sure to tell them the Power Hour sent you.
In a world full of uncertainties, one thing you can control is your preparedness. Heaven's Harvest is here to help you protect your family when it matters most. Imagine having peace of mind with every meal, knowing it's non-GMO and made right here in the USA. From emergency survival food that lasts up to 25 years to heirloom seeds that ensure your garden thrives, we've got you covered. Why wait for a crisis when you can be ready now? With Heaven's Harvest, you're not just buying supplies, you're investing in your family's future. Secure your peace of mind with Heaven's Harvest. Stay prepared, stay safe. Your family deserves it. Visit thepowermall.com or call 877-817-9829 and take the first step towards ultimate preparedness today.
BBS Radio TV. If it's not mainstream, it's on BBS Radio TV, a place for answers.